Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement, the podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the founder and the host of the Rise Above Justice Movement and the Rise Above Justice Movement, the podcast. Today, I'll give a very broad viewer discretion is advised due to the nature of the topics that we will be discussing. Today, I am joined by Eric. Eric, welcome to the podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you. Yeah, this is Eric Fudali. I'm a partner and I'm the managing attorney of the Bloom Firm.
Fantastic. So, walk us through a little bit about your background, what got you into practicing law and also working with survivors, and then we'll kind of jump in and talk about, what you're focused on right at this very moment, because you're obviously very occupied and very busy. But we'll jump into that in just a moment. But walk us through a little bit about your journey, becoming a lawyer, becoming a
Yeah,
business partner, et cetera.
absolutely. So it actually starts in college when I was a film major. I thought I was going to be a director or actor or something in the more creative field. I took a loss like a trial undergrad trial class, and like won the class. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'll just be a trial lawyer. And it happened that quickly. I went to law school at the University of Florida. My first job out of law school was I was a prosecutor in South Florida. I did not like it at all. I lasted about 6 months. The final straw was I had by law, I had to put an 18-year-old in jail for marijuana possession. And I said, well, that's about it for me. I think that's enough. And I left there and I realized, what I really wanted to do is I, wanted to help people. I think having a law degree is a privilege. And puts you in a rare position, unlike a lot of other professions in the world, where you truly, truly can help people, and that's what I wanted to do. So the first, after prosecutor, I joined a law firm that focused solely on clergy abuse, child sex abuse, clergy abuse, Boy Scout abuse. It was very rewarding, very empowering, very intense. And then from there, I moved on in 2018 to the Bloom Firm. And joined Lisa Bloom, who is someone who I'd always admired, for her advocacy and her speaking out and her, how she's always sort of in the public, always speaking out. And I was fortunate enough to join that firm in 2018. I became partner in 2021. Here we are, 2026, and I'm still fighting the good fight with the Bloom firm. I'm now a partner and I'm the managing attorney of the firm, and it's an honor and it's a privilege to continue to fight for those who need it most. The firm primarily does sexual abuse cases, very high profile sexual abuse cases. I currently represent accusers of Sean Diddy Combs, Kanye West, of course, as relevant here, Jeffrey Epstein. But we also do a great deal of discrimination cases, gender discrimination, LGBTQ discrimination, racial discrimination, as well as police brutality cases. So, a lot of we're very sort of present right now in a lot of the issues, our country is facing. So I really appreciate you having me on, and I'm looking forward to being able to be the voice of my Epstein survivor clients.
Absolutely. And as a grassroots movement, the Rise Above Justice Movement has been amplifying the Epstein survivors nonstop. Because obviously, this is something that's very near and dear to me. So, that feeling is reciprocated. Thank you for allowing me to interview you today, because this is something that's obviously very heavy talked about and something that deserves, that attention, obviously, because this is huge. This is very complex. And I've sat down and read some of these files, and I don't even know how to feel. And
Yeah, likewise.
it's one of those things that you can't really understand it until it happens to you. But what are your thoughts on, the quote unquote Department of Justice and releasing the Epstein files, but they've also not been re redacting a lot of the survivor names. And some of those survivors, I follow on social media and watching their reactions. But what are your thoughts on this quote unquote Department of Justice, as you can state? I know you've got to be kind of within those realms, but what are your thoughts on this right now? And just give us your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I don't need to hold back at all. I think this has been an absolute disaster. I think it's been re-victimizing for the many survivors. And it's a complete show of both incompetence, I believe, And in some ways, it seems like some sort of concerted effort to cover up. It's almost this perfect storm where a cover-up meets incompetence. They are, and by they, I mean the Department of Justice has been withholding documents, from what I can tell, redacting documents, withholding information they should not be withholding. And on the reverse, they are revealing information they should not be revealing. They just keep getting it completely wrong. One of my clients, her name appears in this latest release of files 538 times. That is an unfathomable amount of times for one survivor's name who should have been redacted, who the DOJ's name was aware of her name. We provided to them before the first release of documents. 538 times she appears. Another client of mine shows up a few times. And then on the other side, I'm still looking for certain documents, that have not been revealed. I want more information on that 2007, 2008 sweetheart deal Alex Acosta gave Jeffrey Epstein that allowed him to continue to abuse for the next decade or so. I don't see a lot about that. And it's also concerning what Todd Blanche has stated about what's being withheld. I believe he quoted two reasons. One, attorney-client privilege. That seems tenuous at best as to what would qualify as attorney-client privilege. Certainly, it's not between Epstein and an attorney because if the Department of Justice has those documents, that means that that's been waived. And further than that, I just don't know really understand why there would be attorney-client privilege documents. I guess they could argue that the Department of Justice and representing government officials there might be, but in that capacity, it would only be where like a d district attorney is giving advice to a government official. So I don't know why that would even be in an Epstein file. So again, attorney client privilege seems not legit, not very reasonable to me. And they've also mentioned ongoing investigations. But then on the other hand, they've also said there's going to be no more arrests. So my biggest concern is that there is nothing, no supervision, no oversight of the Department of Justice. They're basically, we just have to take them for their word that they're releasing everything they are, that they're only withholding what they're saying, and that they're not going overboard with the privileges and the withholdings. And the problem is that the Department of Justice has done absolutely nothing during this administration, or really in any prior administration as it relates to Jeffrey Epstein, to earn my trust, to earn the survivor's trust, and certainly not to earn the trust of the public.
Which is literally what Department of Justice is supposed to represent and
Right. It's
supposed
in the
to
name.
be.
Yeah.
It's literally in the name, right? But this is not justice. This is literally injustice and silencing survivors' voices. And unfortunately, some of those survivors are no longer here. Virginia. I can't help but think Virginia, 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 right? And that's in the back of my mind. Every time I hear about Epstein, I see her face, I hear her name. It just continues popping in. How do you handle the protection of survivors you represent, and how can the public continue to protect those survivor voices?
That's a great question, and I think it's really about fighting and advocacy. Jeffrey Epstein, returns to the news, every few months or so, when it appears Donald Trump has run out of distractions. But they need to stay. The fight needs to stay prevalent. The fight needs to stay relevant. It's important to remember that these survivors of Jeffrey Epstein have been wronged, and disregarded and disrespected and victimized for like 3 decades, possibly more at this point. In the 90s, the FBI had credible information about Jeffrey Epstein. Nothing was done. In 2007, 2008, Alex Acosta had him in his grasp, literally caught him, had the opportunity and had the resources to put one of the greatest predators of our time behind bars forever. And he didn't do it. He gave him a slap on the wrist and he allowed him to continue to abuse. Then, of course, 2000, mid 2016, 17, 18, he's finally arrested. Finally, it appears he's going to be brought to justice. And very suspiciously, he's allowed to kill himself in federal custody. Then, once again, we get to Ghislaine Maxwell. She's prosecuted. She becomes a convicted child sex trafficker. She's put in prison. Finally, there appears to be some semblance of justice. And then, of course, after being given a platform by Todd Blanche, she's moved to a minimum security resort style prison. So it's been one thing after another for these survivors. They continue to get wronged. It's 3 steps forward, 100 steps back, and they continue to fight. And that's what's so remarkable. Nothing seems to deter their spirits. No matter how many times they're victimized or re-victimized, how many times they're exploited for political gain, how many times they're disregarded by the Department of Justice and other political leaders, they continue to fight. So My advice to those one who want to keep supporting them is continue to fight for them, continue to advocate, continue to be their voice, continue to rise up, continue to demand accountability, demand exposure, and demand justice for them, and to bring those who enabled Jeffrey Epstein, who co-abused with Jeffrey Epstein, who facilitated Jeffrey Epstein to true justice.
Thank you for sharing that. And there was an article from Politico on January 21st that a federal judge denied requests from Thomas Massie and Ro Khanna to appoint an independent monitor to oversee the Justice Department's disclosure of the files related to Jeffrey Epstein, while conceding lawmakers have raised legitimate concerns about the department's compliance with the law. Now, I was excited whenever I saw that literally almost unanimously, every single senator, bipartisanly, and in the House, all but one, voted, to release these files, right? With the Epstein Files Transparency Act. Now, what's your thoughts? Obviously, there needs to be an independent monitor to oversee the Epstein Files release. They just released these new files, and they're absolutely damning. And there seems to be a common question of, well, what about the Democrats in the files? Well, here's my honest to God opinion. I don't give a damn what party somebody belongs
Thank
to.
you. Yes, exactly.
What I care about, if that includes Bill Clinton, if that includes George Bush, if that includes Donald Trump, if that includes any of them, I don't give a damn what party somebody belongs to. Bring them all to justice. These survivors have been fighting each and every single day. And I cannot imagine seeing my abuser's face in the headlines every 5 seconds. I honestly do not know how they do it, but I'm grateful they do because it's opened a lot of eyes. But it's also silenced a lot of others, And so there obviously needs to be this independent monitor to oversee the Epstein Files release. But this judge noted that his order didn't foreclose the lawmaker's right to sue. But what's your thoughts on this?
Right. Well, that's a lot of great points you made there. I want to go back to that first one you made, which is that, we don't care what side of the aisle they're on. We absolutely don't care. And I can tell you, even more importantly, the survivors don't care, right? Justice, sexual abuse does not have a political party. Sexual exploitation does not align with a political party. We don't care if they're Democrats, Republicans, whatever, if they were facilitating or helping or joining Jeffrey Epstein in the abuse, they need to be investigated and they need to be held accountable. And I can assure you the survivors feel the same way. And it drives me crazy when, I keep hearing, well, what about Clinton? Well, yes, what about Clinton? What about this? I'm like, yeah, if there's evidence that they were involved, they should be investigated and prosecuted. I don't care who they are, really. For the judge's order, I mean, the judge obviously has legal precedent for that order, but I do believe that there needs to be a lawsuit. It's certainly something myself, my team, and the survivors I represent have been discussing and looking into. We were going to be writing an amicus brief in support of what Massey and O'Connor were advocating for. But I do believe there needs to be a special appointed master because we can't trust the Department of Justice, and it's such a terrible tragedy to have to say that out loud. But I simply cannot trust this Department of Justice or any Department of Justice who is, especially, and it's not just that this Department of Justice, seems to be from what we can tell, Trump's Department of Justice, but every Department of Justice dating back to the 90s has failed the Epstein victims. And I think that's important to know. The Department of Justice's failure for the Jeffrey Epstein survivors also is not specific to a political party. They were failing them through the Clinton administration, the Obama administration, Trump administration, Biden administration, Trump administration, right? I mean, there's never been true justice and accountability for Jeffrey Epstein. And he continues, what's so baffling to me and so frustrating and infuriating is that he's the only criminal I've ever seen who continues to get special treatment beyond the grave. He's still getting special treatment. He's still being protected. His documents and his evidence are still being protected. His cohorts are still being protected. It's unfathomable. You'd think, there was a sense of relief and a sense of, while there was frustration that he was able to kill himself in prison, there was a sense of, okay, now we're going to get to the bottom of it. Now there will be justice. Now there we can really see. And it's this we're 10 years after almost that he took his own life in prison, that or in jail, that we still don't have the full picture of what was going on there.
And I going to the US Department of, going to justice.gov/Epstein, it asks you, are you 18 years or older? Okay. You hit yes or no. You hit yes. It says, thanks for verifying. It doesn't, I, oh my God, excuse us, Eric, but this is absolute bullshit. And I'm sitting here thinking, because, and I also can't help but think that Pam Bondi served as Attorney General of Florida from 2011 to 2019. I can't help but think this was happening literally in her backyard, in her own goddamn state. And it's like, you did absolutely nothing to protect these victims. You were supposed to be the attorney general. You're supposed to prosecute things like this, and you didn't. You were complicit in the silence and the suffering of these survivors. And you go on, and it's like, are you 18 years older? And you get yes. And it's like, thanks for verifying. Yeah, how the hell do you know that? There's no way to actually know that I can just say yes. But these photos that are in this recent batch are literally the most disturbing that I've probably ever seen. And there's videos that are deeply disturbing. And then also not redacting survivor names, but you're protecting the powerful and you're protecting the rich. Meanwhile, these survivors deal with the criticism of social media. You know, some of them voted for Donald Trump and they're like, oh, well, you know, how did you vote for somebody who, you know, XYZ? Like, it doesn't fucking matter. What matters is their voices are being silenced, and that is the part that matters. But, you know, kind of pivoting a little bit and kind of thinking about that, how do you deal with the criticism that these survivors are facing? Because I know you've been contacted, like, hey, you know, XYZ said this, but how do you deal with that criticism? And especially from like your legal standpoint, what have you been kind of seeing a little bit?
Well, I mean, unfortunately in this country, there's always backlash to those who, who accuse powerful people. I represent an accuser of Sean Diddy Combs. I was at his criminal trial, and it was remarkable, in a negative way, seeing the support against the survivors and against Donald Trump. I represent a young woman who's made accusations against, Ye, aka, formerly known as Kanye West. And she's had to sort of go in hiding based on the type of, criticism and ridicule and vitriol she was seeing online against her as well. That's just common. And it happens with all of the high profile defendants that I represent accusers of. It's common. It's just what happens in the United States. And unfortunately, Jeffrey Epstein is no different. And what the problem and the real sort of, if I could break it down to the real issue with Jeffrey Epstein and the survivors and how they've been treated, it's that the Department of Justice, the very organizations that were meant to be protecting these survivors, have seemed to have almost flipped and have been exploiting the survivors and protecting the predators. And that's really the most fundamental issue, is that there's so much effort. And so you hear these interviews of that one, I think it was the New Orleans congressman who, I don't, his name escapes me, who was the one vote against, the Epstein Act. And his reasoning was something along the lines of, well, there's going to be too many names in there, that there's not, protecting basically the accused is really what it was about. And that's such a, And even though there was just one vote, I think that's sort of been the premise and the impetus behind a lot of this, is that there's too much effort to that it's protecting the elite. It's protecting this elite group of predators and billionaires who associated with Jeffrey Epstein, even after he became a registered sex offender in 2008. That's important to note, that I have a lot to say about what Alex Acosta did in 2008, but the one thing he did do is publicly he made Jeffrey Epstein a registered sex offender. So I find it very intriguing to see in these files, as you go through them, who continued to hang out, who continued to socialize, who continued to associate closely with Jeffrey Epstein after it was revealed he was a registered sex offender. I think those people have a lot of questions to answer about why they continued to socialize so closely and visit the island, of a child of a sex registered sex offender. But yeah, I think the fundamental issue is that it's flipped as to who they're protecting and who they are disregarding. And it should be about protecting and amplifying the voices of the survivors at the expense of the accused, as opposed to protecting the accused at the expense of the survivors, which is what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And the representative you're thinking of is Clay Higgins from
Thank you.
Louisiana.
Yeah, that's the one.
427 to 1 was the vote in the House for
So
the
gross.
Epstein Files Transparency Act. And like you stated, He stated files to the media, quote, will absolutely result in innocent people being hurt. If they're innocent, it shouldn't hurt them.
Right. And you know nothing about how the victims are being hurt, and how his one vote it was hurtful to the victims. You know, I think that was just a really gross vote to, you know, there would have been, remember, these survivors will take anything, any amount of support from the government and justice, even modicum of justice and accountability they can get. And something like a unanimous vote in Congress would have been a real boost. Would have been a modicum of justice, would have been something for them to hang their hat on and say, well, you know what? The United States Congress was 100% behind us in this pursuit. And of course, Clay Higgins had to ruin that. And it's just such a, you know, I think that vote means a lot more than, you know, than just, you know, a single vote. I think that was a really gross thing from him and, you know, showed the sort of disregard for the survivors. It's a weird issue, you know, because I think this is one of the most bipartisan issues I've ever seen. It seems like the entire country, the entire government, other than the singular Trump administration, wants those files completely released. You know, if I went to, I live in New York City, if I went to a, you know, a progressive rally here, I guaranteed there would be support for releasing the files. But if I went to, you know, Missouri and went to a MAGA rally there, I guarantee there would be support for releasing the files there as well. It is a truly bipartisan issue, and it didn't even need a law. That's the other really frustrating thing. You know, there's been so much talk about this law and following the law, and Todd Blanche says, well, we're following, you know, we're in compliance with the law. No law was necessary to release files. They could have released the files on the first day of the Trump, you know, of Trump's presidency, like he said he would, like he campaigned on. There didn't need to be a law. There didn't need to be all this advocacy and back and forth, and you know, bringing the survivors and forcing the survivors to do, you know, rallies and continue to fight. They could have just released them. And I think that's getting lost as well. That, yeah, great, we had a law, but that wasn't necessary, and it was only necessary because of the protection these files were getting.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's ironic that you mentioned Missouri because I actually grew up in Missouri.
Oh, that was unintentional.
yes, I actually lived in Missouri and I grew up in Missouri for a very long time, and then we moved across the state line to Kansas. Yes, there is a lot of bipartisan support for the Epstein files
Yeah, that was just
and.
picking a. I just picked a random state in the middle of the country. Yeah, certainly no offense to Missourians or you. Yeah, but you
No,
know,
absolutely. I
I just
don't.
think it's truly just a truly bipartisan issue, and the. You know, the point is that I think if you go to any state in any rally on either side, the majority of the people at that rally are going to say, yes, of course, release all of the Epstein files immediately.
Yeah, no, 100%. So what is next for, you know, the Epstein files, and what is next that people can get involved in? You know, ensuring justice for these survivors. What's the next update?
So really another great question. You know, we're exploring all avenues, you know, looking at potential lawsuits, you know, for the files and for other, you know, disregard for the survivors in the past, you know, few decades, and how the Epstein issue has been handled by, you know, by the Department of Justice and by the federal government and state governments, state law enforcement, federal law enforcement. So that's something we're exploring and actively looking into at this point. But it's continuing to fight, you know, it's continuing to raise the voices of survivors, continuing to demand, excuse me, from the Department of Justice that they actually release all the files. They've admitted themselves that these are not all the files. We know that there appears to be millions and millions of more. There appears to be redactions that don't belong in these files. There appears to be places where they should be redacted. So it's just not letting things slide. It's continuing to fight, continuing to rally, continuing to raise the voices of the survivors, continuing, even if it doesn't relate to Jeffrey Epstein, and this is so important, is continuing to fight and hold abusers accountable. The best way to protect victims in the future is to hold abusers accountable when they're caught. Stand up. We call it sort of collective empowerment. And it's something I see all the time when one person, when one woman, say, has the courage to accuse a high-profile individual. Not only do you see other potential alleged victims of that one individual come forward, but you start to see like a trickle-down effect of other victims coming forward against their abuser, regardless of who it may be. So I say very passionately and adamantly that stand up. This is a, you know, a message to those suffering in silence. Stand up for yourself. Hold your abuser, hold your assaulter, hold your exploiter accountable. do it publicly, you know, stand up and fight, because that's the best way to protect individuals. That's the way to best way to protect women. It's the best way to protect children. It's the best way to protect sex trafficking victims, is to stand up and to expose predators and hold them accountable, whether it's related to Jeffrey Epstein or not. I think that's the best advice I give, because like every news story, this Epstein story is going to come in waves. It's going to be really prominent, like it is right now, and then we're going to go to war with Iran or something, and it's going to, you know, or some other nonsense, and it's going to go down, and there's going to be less talk about it, and it's going to take more and more fighting, more and more advocacy to get it back in the mainstream conversation, and make sure the public understands that this story is not over until every single person who helped and facilitated and abused with Jeffrey Epstein is held accountable.
I love how you said it about holding perpetrators accountable, because even though Jeffrey Epstein is no longer on this side of the world, there's a lot of people that are mimicking Jeffrey Epstein that have been for many, many years, even before Epstein, and will continue to go for generations afterwards. And
Absolutely. You know, and let me just jump in, because I want to emphasize that one thing about the files that was, I guess, not shocking to me, because I've been so, you know, involved and so well, you know, I'm well informed on that, is sort of the brazenness, the casualness in which these billionaire, high profile leaders in the world talk about women, talk about abuse, talk about gathering women, the way they objectify and treated women so casually, I think can be a good lesson to the public, to see the way that these powerful men and these powerful individuals, not just the ones in these Epstein files, but other, you know, abusers and exploiters and sex traffickers, view women and feel as if they are untouchable. You know, these emails demonstrate a complacency and an untouchability almost, that they thought they will never be caught, they will never be brought to justice. They can openly talk about this stuff, brag about this stuff, objectify women like this without any real consequence. And to an extent, they're absolutely correct. Because as we sit here today, you know, you and I sit here on February 2nd, 2026, the only person to ever be actually brought to justice for these crimes of Jeffrey Epstein has been Ghislaine Maxwell. And she is now in a minimum security resort style prison. So, you know, these men were right. They were able to talk so openly and objectify women like this so brazenly, because there is no accountability. So you can imagine what is going on in our world right now, what is going on in our country, where these powerful men feel so emboldened to be able to act and speak like this. Think about how much that must go on even outside these Jeffrey Epstein files. And that's why it's so important to continue to hold powerful men, powerful abusers accountable. And that is something, you know, I've dedicated my career to.
And you are an incredible human.
Oh, thank you. I'll take it. Thank you.
I've watched a lot of your interviews on like MS
Oh,
Now and like
appreciate that.
TV,
Yeah.
and I, you know, these survivors are very lucky to have somebody like you that,
Very nice. Thank you.
you know, fights like hell for survivors and not the perpetrator. You know, there's a lot of support around
Yeah,
these files and around
there is.
supporting these survivors. And, you know, I see in our comments all the time, you know, we have close to 300 or a little over 300,000 followers on our
Yeah,
social
that's great.
media. And we see people commenting like all the time, like Epstein files, Epstein files, Epstein files. Like it's
Right.
literally like constant. And we see that.
And I think that's the one positive. You know, it's hard to take a lot of positives away from this, but I do think there's been some real support for these survivors. You know, I went to that rally in DC and I spoke on behalf of one of my clients, and that what my client was able to stand up there on stage with me, and it was the first time she'd ever appeared in public and allowed to her face to be associated with Jeffrey Epstein. And I'm seeing a lot of that. I'm seeing a real sort of grassroots but really collective empowering group of support for these women, for these survivors. And it's almost, you know, similar, reminds me of the Me Too movement. You know, there's a similar advocacy, there's a similar sort of push to believe women, and to advocate for victims, you know, like we saw during that, you know, that early Me Too era. And that is empowering, that is positive. And I think it's important to recognize that despite all the negative, there really has been a push. You know, Jeffrey Epstein has been a little bit, what I say, I've, you know, been saying, like, a memeified almost. He's become sort of a joke, you know, in this sort of cultural zeitgeist because of how prominent he was. And I think what this, the release of these files, the push to release these files, and the advocacy on and behalf of these survivors, I think has sort of, you know, infiltrated the public mindset to be in support of victims and to really sort of rise again. And I find that very encouraging and very empowering. And I hope that continues to move forward, even beyond Jeffrey Epstein, and into the future. And we continue and go back to, believing women and standing up for victims of sex trafficking and sex abuse against high powerful, high profile powerful individuals, regardless of how powerful they are and regardless of how beloved they may be, based on their art or based on their persona. It's really important that now more than ever, we continue to stand up and fight.
Absolutely. And one of our collaborators wanted me to ask you a question is, how do you navigate the trauma and how do you navigate everything that your clients are facing? How do you navigate? How do you navigate that?
It's a great question. It's something that I'm constantly learning. It's certainly not something I'm 100% perfect at. I don't think any attorney who does what I do is. I think you're constantly learning every client you have and every person you speak to. But it's really about finding that fine line between professionalism, advocacy, pursuit of justice, along with empathy, and humanity. I think that's what it's about. It's really on being able to understand and relate and empathize and sort of humanize with your clients and understand them and listen to them and then be their voice and really fight for them. It comes down to the fight, I think. The harder, we fight for our clients and the harder we advocate for our clients, the more empowered they feel, and the better they feel, and the more sort of therapeutic almost the process can be. That's something we at the Bloomberg really sort of, not sort of, really, really emphasize, really pride ourselves on, is that this process of hiring a lawyer, pursuing a powerful individual, can be really devastating if handled incorrectly. It can be re-victimizing. It can be traumatizing if handled incorrectly. So we really, really fight, and we really, really focus and work hard on making the process of talking to us, calling us for that first time, hiring us, putting their faith in us, putting their trust in us, making that a therapeutic process, giving them a voice, letting them feel like they are standing up for themselves, that it's not just hiring a lawyer and letting them do the work, really working with them and raising them up. I think that's how you really navigate representing someone who's been through such terrible trauma. I always remind the associates at my firm that no one calls the Bloom Firm because something good happened to them. Right? The only time you're calling the Bloom Firm, the only time you're calling me, the only time you're going to have a conversation with me as a client is because something bad happened to you. And perhaps the worst thing that ever, that could happen to you has happened to you. And that means you need someone who is a really, really strong voice and a really, really strong advocate. And that's what we pride ourselves to be. And I think when you have that mentality of being a voice and being an advocate and being a fighter, everything else just comes naturally in how you navigate it.
Absolutely. Eric, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking with me. And I'm sure this will be one of many conversations as, we continue learning more about these Epstein files and learning more about the implications and how damning it actually truly is. But, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast and, amplifying these survivors' voices because we see each and every single day on these headlines and just the watered down version of what's
Yeah.
truly going on, right?
Right.
So, again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Please take care of yourself and, give all of our love to these survivors and to all survivors. If you are listening, just know that you're not alone. You have people like Eric, you have people like me, you have people like these survivors that are coming forward so incredibly bravely to amplify their voices so that others do not have to.
Right. You're absolutely right. And thank you so much for giving me the platform, giving me opportunity to advocate and to speak on behalf of my survivors. And I'm reading your logo here, empower, inspire, and lead. And that's pretty good there. I mean, I think that's sort of the lesson we can take here. Continue to empower, continue to inspire, and continue to be a leader when it comes to advocating for survivors. So I really appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Please take care of yourself, okay? Thank you.